Chapter 2, Mental Development, Evolving Maturity for Performance. Progress and Development. Development is the underlying process through which you transcend previous limitations, create novelty, expand your faculties, and generate greater integrative capacities. When you develop, you become psychologically larger. Transcending limitations means the new, larger you can actually hold, relate to, and manage the previous you. This is a process Piaget, perhaps the most famous figure in developmental psychology, calls decentration, and Robert Keegan renames as recentration. As a new self and a new orientation are discovered and inhabited, new choices are created. A greater diversity of possibilities emerge. This larger size and broader inclusion is an increase in complexity. There is more psychological space. With space comes more freedom and a greater possibility for inclusion. As you will see, development creates greater facilities that ultimately can support novel functioning and performance in your life. For example, when you were in your first year of life, you were largely an impulsive being. When you had to pee, you just peed. You were limited by the impulse's urgency. When the pee impulse arose, you peed whether you were wearing a diaper or not. Fast forward 12 to 18 months, and you likely have undergone a developmental leap forward. While the old you simply acted out impulses, the new you controls impulses. We could say that you were your impulses. Now you have your impulses. You transcended your previous limitations, and in the process, something new was created. In this case, the choice of when to pee, where to pee, how you want to pee, and so on. You could still choose to pee in your diaper, but you could also choose to make bubbles in the toilet, as my nephew now says. You have integrated the impulse to pee and now can manage, regulate, and control your peeing. This is a developed move from being impulsive to having your impulses. In the process, you become psychologically bigger, more capable, and more mature. Becoming psychologically bigger is not always better, though. While a bigger self always brings with it greater capacities to function and perform in life, how these are used is a separate inquiry into what supports and or detracts from goodness. To continue with our P example, you could use your newly gained psychological size to save some diapers and act like a big girl or a big boy. We might say this is a good thing. But these larger capacities can also be used for less noble drives. Perhaps at some point you are frustrated, so you might have used your newly gained ability to control your pee impulses and decided to pee on a younger sibling. Maybe you decided to pee on your mother's favorite photo album or on the wall next to your bedroom. A larger mind has more resources, but how these added capacities are used is again a separate inquiry. So while development is always a movement toward larger capacities, we cannot necessarily equate it with progress. This is an important distinction we will return to, as it is of central importance in our exploration of human elegance. Elegance is both a function of refined adult developmental maturity and the responsible deployment of our larger resources as a human being. Our ultimate aim together is to stimulate greater adult developmental complexity and responsibly employ our larger, more flexible, and dynamic ways of functioning in the world to serve greater truth, goodness, and beauty. We must aspire and participate with both facets, or elegance will elude us. And even more importantly, we cannot use higher developmental capacities to serve lesser responsible motives. So, the prerequisites for elegance are 1, refined developmental facility, and 2, responsible deployment of capacities. As an example, we can turn our attention to the United States during its subprime housing market boom. The American psyche was, and perhaps in many ways still is, presumably infatuated with having bigger homes. Similar to a toddler wanting a bigger truck instead of the smaller one, many Americans wanted a bigger house as opposed to a smaller one. Why? Because bigger is often equated with better. Quantitative judgment is what governs the action logic or decision making in toddlerhood. If an adult does not fully outgrow this stage of development, he or she will, at least from time to time, make decisions from these less complex levels of functioning. A 4 or 5-year-old is fairly harmless making decisions around bigger and more is better reasoning. However, an adult holding nuanced long-term planning skills, access to global resources for manufacturing, and belonging to a corporate culture of sociocentric entitlement is a much different consideration. One adult is financing a home for another who cannot realistically afford it. Yet both are, at least in this moment, in our example, reasoning with bigger is better logic. This is a massive problem. One wants to loan a larger sum to presumably generate more revenue, while the other wants a bigger home because, for similar reasons, bigger or more square footage is better. Multiply this over billions of dollars and millions of people, and suddenly a global financial crisis is in the making. Obviously, the subprime housing market in the United States is vastly more complex than our example here. However, you can see some of the problems inherent in higher capacities serving less mature reasoning. Bigger is better logic should never have access to global manufacturing infrastructure, processes, and technologies. It is fairly obvious what is going to happen. Most of the world's resources will end up in a small portion of our human family's hands. And like our young toddler, who will likely want a bigger toy truck as soon as he sees one, they will be presumably unhappy or frustrated with their home that is lacking in some way compared to what they have seen through the media, friend, boss, or coworker. In another example, we do not want nuclear weapons, a product of refined mathematical, scientific, and mechanical development, getting into the hands of terrorists whose actions stem from a simplistic kill those who are different from me reasoning. Having developmental capacities hijacked by earlier, less complex motives almost always leads to disaster. So, as we explore human elegance together, it is essential that you closely watch and monitor your less evolved motives as we unlock and investigate your higher developmental capacities. The architecture of development. Robert Keegan is the William and Miriam Meehan Professor in Adult Learning and Professional Development at Harvard University, and the Educational Chair for the Institute for Management and Leadership in Education. In the field of adult developmental psychology, Keegan is one of the leading contemporary voices of our day. His developmental model is one of the most brilliant, insightful, and clear. Additionally, his model is supported by an impressive body of research spanning decades of data with solid cross-cultural validity. As such, Keegan's model is the backbone of our exploration of developmental functioning. subject-object theory. Keegan's developmental model rests on his subject-object theory, which posits each developmental stage is a balance between who is subject and what objects can be possessed. In his masterpiece, In Over Our Heads, Keegan goes on to define what is subjective and what is objective. Objects are elements of our knowing or organizing of experience that we can reflect on, handle, look at, be responsible for, relate to, take control of, internalize, and or otherwise operate upon. The key point is that development defines what objects we are capable of holding and being responsible for. What is subjective are elements of our knowing or organizing of an experience that we are identified with, fused with, tied to, or embedded in. So we have objects, and we literally are the subjective facets of experience. Interestingly, we are unable to responsibly manage the subjective dimensions of who we are. No one can be in control of, reflect on, or handle that which is subject. Truly subjective facets of experience are absolute and immediate, while objects are relative and mediated. When development occurs, the subject that was identified and fused with becomes a new object in awareness. In this way, the subject that once held you can now be mediated and managed as it is now an object inside of your awareness. Returning back to our example of the impulse to pee. First, you were your impulse to pee. When the impulse arises, you peed regardless of what the situation was. We could say that the impulse to pee had you, or that the subject that had you was impulsive. Next, through development, you gain these impulses as an object in your awareness, and thus you can control, choose, and regulate your impulse to pee in novel ways. Abilities and responsibilities increase and expand with each stage. Prior subjects become new objects in experience, and a larger, more capable seat of subjectivity is established, creating a new subject-object balance. These constellations of subject and object are the underlying architecture for how you and what appears to be all humans structure and organize experience. The subject-object structure of your thought, feelings, and the organization of how you relate socially are all governed by the developmental stage you are in. When we look at human functioning through this lens, we are placing our attention on what kinds of objects someone can see and what facets fundamentally cannot be seen, at least not yet. It is a common yet grave mistake to look at the content of thought, feeling, and/or social relating to attempt to determine development. For example, we cannot look at only the content of someone's values to assess their development. They may value personal power, conformity, or universal equality. By itself, this content is inadequate to assess development. We must get more curious about ourselves and one another in order to better understand these underlying relationships between subject and object, what Keegan calls the deep structure in meaning evolution. For example, let's take two individuals who both value universal quality. At a surface level, we may presume that they are at the same developmental stage. When we probe into the subject-object architecture with greater nuance, which you are learning to do right now, we may discover how one of the individuals is reflecting the cultural beliefs of his family of origin in an unexamined way. The other individual, however, is elucidating a value system that she has created and authored for herself in response to life experience. They have the same surface features, yet these two individuals are reflecting two different developmental stages. The first is held by values established by outside of himself, while the latter is creating a value that is based on her own inner authority. Assessments of development become more accurate as we practice attending to the subject-object architecture of your own and others' self-organization. Through this book, you will learn to go beneath the content or surface features of thought, feelings, and social relating into the defining structure of what is subject and what is object. It is here, in the subject-object balance, where you will gain more accurate and pragmatically focused insights. Get lost in categorizing people based on content, and you will undermine your own insight, performance, and skillful means in the world. Developmental constructivism. A second important feature of Keegan's model, and central to the developmental theories of Piaget and Vygotsky, is developmental constructivism. This theory proposes human beings do not encounter a single world or reality with varying degrees of accuracy. People are not organisms that simply react to the environment as the behaviorists often maintain. Instead, developmental constructivism sets forth a position where human beings co-construct many realities. We form and establish many constellations of objects. We actively seek out a diversity of experiences and engage in an ongoing experimentation with ourselves and our environments. Furthermore, we construct an interpretation about what all this means. Human beings construct their meaning. And this meaning, along with reality as they hold it to be true, in their minds is developmentally constrained. For example, children are constructing realities that are different from the realities we find in adult minds. Children are not so much inaccurately perceiving the adult world, as if there is but one adult view. Instead, children are constructing a different world in response to a partially shared environment. Experience is co-constructed by your developmental capacities, influencing your perception of the surrounding internal and external environmental stimuli. The developmental architecture of your subject-object balance determines what objects you can and cannot see. This deep structure of meaning-making, how you make sense of your reality, powerfully influences what reaches your perception and how you interpret stimuli. The environmental stimuli that is reaching your co-constructive subject stems from the psychological, physiological, social, and cultural facets of experience. Daniel Siegel, clinical professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine, identifies 8 senses that participate with the 4 domains of interior and exterior stimuli in the diagram above. The diagram above shows 4 quadrants. The upper left quadrant is the psychological. The upper right quadrant is the physiological. The lower right quadrant is the social, and the lower left is the cultural. The left-hand side are interior stimuli, and the right quadrants are the external stimuli. At the center, we find the developmental architecture. It's the subject-object balance that we've been exploring, and there's a sphere, a circle, where we have different faculties of perception that take in psychological, physiological, social, and cultural stimuli. The five senses, taste, touch, sound, sight, and smell, largely participate with physiological and social external stimuli. The sixth and seventh senses leverage interoception and mindsight to sense the interior, subjective psychological landscapes, while the eighth sense provides an ability to sense relational and cultural stimuli. To summarize, you are always actively shaping, constructing, and forming a reality that fits within your developmental capability at any given moment. And how you are presently co-constructing these very sentences right now is largely invisible to you until you developmentally outgrow your current subject and move it into an object. This is a feature of what integral theorist and philosopher Ken Wilber calls the embedded unconscious. You cannot see the activity and processes of your subject because you are fused to, identified with, and embedded in the activity of your meaning-making. As you will see in detail, each developmental stage's subject actively co-creates a reality all unto its own. The implications of the developmental constructive view are immense. The more obvious implications is in each stage disclosing a new strata of reality, where more objects, nuance, and complexity become known as the human being develops. The less obvious implications can be found in the dramatic changes in the subject. Development changes who you are. When you stop identifying with impulses, the who that you become changes significantly. Changes in identity are just the beginning, though. With development, where you are undergoes massive changes. You can be located in the same room of your house, yet when a developmental shift happens, you are inhabiting a different location. You are no longer inside of your impulses. Instead, you stand somewhere else entirely, such that the impulses are now an object. So, while your physical location may not change, your interior or psychological location undergoes radical changes. Even what you are changes. The self that is impulsive is made up of a different interior substance than the self that is imperial in its insistence, reliance, and allegiance to personal needs, desires, and preferences. As it turns out, there is not just one type of human being. Human beings are made up of different interior substances based on their developmental complexity. Finally, how you function is shifted by development. Developmental constructivism proposes the human being is actively co-constructing not only a reality out there, but also a self or subject that qualitatively differs in identity, location, substance, and function. As you can see, if you are successful in leveraging this book to help you grow into your larger maturity, everything in your life will change. This is no exaggeration. The reality or objects that you constellate are going to be more distinct and nuanced. New objects will appear. You naturally become more inclusive to the diversity of objects you create. How you function with these objects often expands in flexibility and capability. The location of where you are within the immediacy of any moment expands. As you will see, you will discover more roominess, or what we might call freedom. Even the substance of what you are is going to dramatically change in properties. As you grow, the substance of you becomes more expansive, creative, integrative, and adaptive. So, to highlight, development yields transformations in the following four domains. 1. Identity. 2. Location. 3. Substance. And 4. Functionality. All this leads to a simple pragmatism. Development makes you more capable. It brings forth your greater performance possibilities. You can become more functional. You can locate yourself into a larger space. The substance you are made up of, that which you are subjectively merged with, can expand to be more integrative and liberated. Before we turn our attention to these larger capacities of your elegance, let us visit Keegan's most prominent adult stages of development.